responsibility is so good. It feels so natural.
What's something you've written and you've just gone, I can't know?
You can look at it and kind of try and learn from the things you've been through.
You write songs, right?
I've read that a few times too. I know, we've sold that many records.
This week on The Best Bits, Matt Lovekus is an actor and writer behind the hilarious character Gavin Tanner, who had his debut this week on ABC TV as part of the Comedy Showroom pilot series. Hear why Matt thought the lovable Bogan's girlfriend could be played perfectly by NIDA graduate Emily Rose Brennan, who also joined us. Another creative duo is Alice Keith and Syme Nugent. They make up Melbourne band Sweet Jean, and Alice reveals she used to play the crumb horn and describes why that didn't make her a popular teen. But first up, our feature artist this week, Paul Dempsey. He doesn't shy away from asking the tough questions through his songwriting, and it seems that even death isn't a topic to be feared around the Dempsey dinner table.
Just a whole lot more weirdness and confusion, and you know, it's the sound of someone who's butting up against reality, I think.
Yeah,
that's really probably the best way to describe it, is just a whole lot of songs about like what is this shit? Like,
yeah,
you know, that's, and sometimes that sounds that's the sound of bewilderment, or the sound of curiosity, or the sound of excitement, or the sound of frustration. But yeah, essentially, it's all just like, what is this? What's, you know?
Yeah, the eternal question.
What's this for?
Did you feel like you kind of came to any conclusion? Or?
No, never. No, and I think if anything,
this is what I love about you. These questions are always so big, and you're always willing to explore. And that's something I find fascinating about your work, is that it's like you're always putting a line out to go, how do I make sense of this? And I always get that sense of everyone, you coming back in the songwriting.
Yeah.
But you still don't understand what it is.
No, not at all. And I don't know that I ever will. And I think that's the probably where I just draw a lot of my creative energy from, is that, you know, there is no why. It's just an ongoing thing. And if anything, I hope that I feel like I'm getting better at introducing some humor into it.
Yeah.
And sounding at least a bit more, I think when I was a young man doing this, I sounded angry about it, about these questions. But now I'm just a bit more like, it's sort of more bemused, and I'm having a bit more fun with it.
Yeah.
But it's essentially the same thing. It's just like a whole lot of songs about what the hell is this shit, you know?
There's a bit of that in this record, and I kind of liked it, especially the final song.
Nobody's trying to tell me something.
Yeah, nobody's trying to tell me something. I love that. I feel like there's a real sense of you know who you are now, and you're saying things that you want to say on this record.
I mean, the opening line of that song is that song is also like, it's kind of an epilogue to the record. As I say, a lot of the record is just this sort of, you know, this is an idiot arguing with reality, and you're gonna die. We're all gonna die. And there's really no getting around that. And whether or not you think there's something after this, you know, that, and I guess then the chorus is, nobody's trying to tell me something. It's, I don't know, it's kind of a celebration. Like, you know, we're all going to die, so you better...
might as well enjoy it.
Better start, trying to be good and have fun. And I don't know. I think death, you know, death, we run from death, we hide from death. And, you know, I don't know, we shouldn't.
Yeah, we can't avoid it.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. I remember someone saying a while ago about, you know, we should talk about death at the dinner table, because it shouldn't be this, you know, spectre that haunts us, you know. I don't know. I feel like my family talks about death a lot, you know. We've had death in our family and and it's almost, my mum is hilarious. It's almost a bit casual. So-and-so died, blah, blah, blah. It's just like every time you talk to her, somebody died. And I think, I don't know, there's a sort of acceptance that is, I don't know, a better way maybe than being scared. And I don't know. And look, I'm fascinated by time and concepts of time and, you know, relativity, stuff like that. Time is the ultimate. Time is the thing we're all racing against.
That is true. That is true. Paul, one other track I want to talk to you about as well is The True Sea, the epic 7-minute one. It's got a beautiful film clip as well where it basically covers your whole experience in Chicago.
Yeah.
In a way. And do you want to talk to me, though? I could see you having a good time making the music, but do you want to talk to me about maybe the lyrical inspiration behind that one?
Yeah, it's... I sort of obsess about scales of things, you know. So I'm really interested in like physics and, you know, atoms and you know, the tiniest stuff that constitutes our reality, and then the huge, vast, endless universe stuff. I seem to be just always kind of thinking about the scale of things and just. Yeah, I don't know, just shifting between those two things. And that song is very much, it's about two people. It's about the nature of relationships and love and all that sort of stuff. And I guess it tries to tell that kind of story whilst jumping between these scales of, you know, tiny, tiny, tiny things that make up everything and huge, huge, incomprehensible, vast things. It's impossible to comprehend your place in all of this. Again, I come back to this butting up against reality stuff, but it's just trying to comprehend your place in this. It's just, I don't know, it's what keeps me writing songs.
Yeah.
And it's what keeps me contemplating things like love and death and, I don't know, it's, how do you not think about this stuff?
Just take me over the last horizon where this light's never.
This week on DoubleJ.net.au. From Iggy Pop's cockatoo to Laurie Anderson's piano-playing dog, meet some of the pets that inspire great musicians. 10 years on from his passing, we revisit some of the go-betweens Grant McLennan's favourite songs. Mark Pritchard tells us how the West Country of England inspired his latest Tom York-featured album, Under the Sun.
Check out all these articles and more, plus stream the week's shows on doublej.net.au.
Miff's Best Bits on Double J.
I have a couple of the stars of the show, which is called The Legend of Gavin Tanner, Matt Lovekus, and also Emily Rose Brennan in the Double J studios in Perth. Welcome, you two.
Hello.
Hello. How are you going? You've got your debut, your television, ABC TV debut tonight at 9 o'clock. What are the preparations like? Are you kind of going to have a little party or?
Getting new trousers, weeing those trousers, getting some new trousers again.
It's just going to be a trouser party, really. We've got lots of spares on hand.
Trouser party and then pants off, I hope, afterwards. Yeah. When
a pants off party.
It's the only way to party, pants off.
I have heard there'll be a charcuterie board involved. So that's exciting.
That's posh. Mm. That's posh. Mm, yeah. That's very posh. Or is that just a posh way of saying meat tray?
Yeah, that's like just a posh way of saying cold cuts and clean trousers. That's about it.
Oh, so good. Congratulations on the show. It's called The Legend of Gavin Tanner. And if people want to watch it, it's actually up already on iView as part of the ABC Comedy Showroom series. It's fantastic. It's basically, well, it focuses around the character of Gavin Tanner. Do you want to give us a bit of a background on Gavin?
Yeah. Well, Gavin is a guy who is terribly insecure and riddled with neurosis, and he looks like a bogan. He is a bogan. He's a massive bogan, and basically he spends his entire life trying to appear a lot more impressive than he is, and he does, because he doesn't have the goods to back it up, he basically does terrible things in order to try to make himself appear like the legend that he claims he is.
Shall we listen to a clip from the show? This is Gavin Tanner in action.
Yeah, watch and learn as I turn a total stranger, enemy new, best bud ever.
I don't have any valuables.
I'm from next door, dickhead.
Jesus.
Sorry, I thought you were a psychotic ice junkie on one of those meth freakouts. Marshall.
Gavin Tanner, this is me, apprentice Damo.
Oh, yeah? What trade?
Yeah, dealing weed mainly, you know, just doing my bit for the community. Which reminds me, Damo.
Huh.
That one is free. The next one's 50.
Actually, guys, I don't...
Yeah, OK, like... let's see this place you built.
OK. No worries.
Sounds there from The Legend of Gavin Tanner, and it is very funny. And if you recognise that voice, you'd be right in saying it's Adam Zwaar, who plays the character of the next-door neighbour, the very clean-living next-door neighbour who keeps everything kind of nice and neat and sensible. How'd you get Adam on board?
We asked. Well, we wrote the script, and then we sent the script, and apparently he said that most of the time he finds it difficult to kind of see himself in it or to get enthusiastic, but he said he really just kind of connected with it and wanted to be a part of it. And so we were like, thanks very much, Adam.
Welcome on board.
Absolutely. And how did you get involved, Emily? When did that start with you?
Oh, well, gosh. Matt and I actually went to uni together years ago when we were both small fry of the age of, like, what, 17?
Yes.
Yeah, and then obviously we sort of went, graduated, did our own thing. I moved to Sydney and went to drama school, and Matt was working in Perth and doing radio and all sorts of stuff and writing. And then he just phoned me and he was like, I have got the best idea. I have got the best role for you ever. Do you want to audition? I wrote it with you in mind. And I was like, that is one of the best pitches I've ever had. Yes. So
it's true. You know, like when I first started writing it in late 2008, I always pictured Trish, the girlfriend, as being Emily.
Which, that's amazing, because we hadn't seen each other in years. So I was like, bloody hell, yes. And Matt's always been obviously hilarious. So...
And I just realised how terrible a thing that is to say now, is because Trish is a proponent of balladine chic. She's not, I won't say she's the classiest girl in the world.
I was going to say, you've written it with Emily in mind. And how do you know about that,
that's
Emily?
That's a gross misstep. No. It's a testament to my belief in her acting ability to go, it's only Emily could pull off such a transformation as to be able to be this awful.
Miff's Best Bits on Double J.
Sweet Jean is their name. You know them as Alice Keith and Simon Nugent. Welcome to Double J.
Hi, Miff. Thanks for having us.
Lovely to have you in the studio. Now, Alice, the ABC studios are not unfamiliar to you, because people can hear you on RN. You present the live set. You've done a lot of afternoon fill-ins as well, and also covering on The Inside Sleeve, which is a music program there. But we were just talking off air. You've got a new gig.
I'm filling in a couple of weeks doing a live to air on Classic FM as well.
Yes, so. You're living the dream. You're actually living the radio dream. It's where we all want to be.
It's sort of like the David Attenborough of radio announcing, because you get to announce in real time what's going on stage. So it's like the conductor is now taking the stage and the first violinist. So, yeah, I have to brush up.
That's fantastic. And does it make you nervous, though? Is classical music kind of outside your realm?
No, well, I studied classical music at uni. I went to the conservatorium in Adelaide and did an honours degree in composition. So I actually have worked for Classic FM in the past doing music programming. So it's something that I haven't done professionally for a long time, but it's very much part of my background. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I will get to you, Simon, but since you've mentioned the classical training, apparently, Alice, you did used to run around in a Hessian sack at medieval fairs playing a crumb horn. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Yeah, people pay me out for playing the banjo these days, and I'm like, you really have no idea. Like, if you think the banjo is bad, the crumb horn is an instrument, sort of like an early oboe. It's a double reed instrument that sounds like a combination between flatulence and the bagpipes. You know. So, yeah, I was a cool teenager.
Yeah.
I went to an alternative high school, actually, so it was probably the only place I could have gone to school where dressing up in tights and Hessian and playing, you know, the medieval bagpipes was not socially unacceptable. So I was lucky in that respect.
Oh, Alice Keith, I love you even more. Simon, what's it like riding with someone like Alice who's clearly got, you know, quite a background in music? When did you two kind of find the magic together? I mean, obviously, you know, musically. Like, how did that all happen and you decided we're going to write songs that, you know, together and this is what we're going to be?
I think it must be 5 years ago now we started playing music together, and we started covering a bunch of older kind of folk songs and that kind of thing. And then as we were writing and sort of formulating our first album, we met our now dear friend and co-producer, John Castle, and he sort of drew out some of the ways for us to draw out some of the kind of newer sounds in older tropes of music. And then since we put out that record, we've really sort of thrown the whole Scrabble box up in the air, and Monday to Friday is the result of what's landed.
Yeah.
And it's taken about 18 months for us to formulate this record, and it's been a really interesting kind of journey into the unknown for all of us, I think.
Yeah, what's the unknown part about it? Because I feel like Monday to Friday you're dealing with it feels like the more everyday issues, the you know, the more sort of regular thoughts that we might all have. Was what was confronting about this record?
Exactly, because in the past we've written about other people in other times and places. On Dear Departure, which was our first record, we were, I guess, telling narratives about other people or ideas that weren't directly related to us. And on this album, we wanted to set ourselves the challenge of actually writing about the here and now and some of the, you know, significant and less significant things that we were talking about, often, you know, in the backyard with our good mate John. But we also did want to balance it with some, you know, what was...
some of the wonder.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, you can be looking, trying to find a clean pair of underpants while, you know, other human beings are putting a spaceship, landing it on a comet, you know, that kind of thing. It's sort of, you know, we're confronted with this sort of big, small issue all the time. And I think that's what we realised after maybe, you know, we got about halfway through writing the record that this record was actually about.
Yeah, you know that thing when you get to a certain point in life where, you know, you're looking at your aspirations. You might have achieved some, you know, you may have been shooting for the moon on some things and hit a street lamp, and you have to kind of, I guess, come to terms with where you're at. Yeah, what Simon said before about looking for that sense of wonder and where you find that. There's a phrase that Simon's used about, you know, once you realise you're all just monkeys wearing runners, like,
I
where
love
do you look?
That.
where do you look for that sense of wonder? For us, it's in things like science and those achievements.
Come any closer and you'll find out it could be terror or relief. Terror or relief. Yeah.
catch up with Miff Warhurst for lunch. Weekdays from 11 on Double J.